Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, I reached out to Chuck Cogliandro, who is founder of the Commandi Drum Circle and also a group called Coming to the Table. Chuck, welcome to The Local Take.
Thank you, Kiplin. Thanks for having me.
You know, before we get started, I want to share that I had subscribed to the Commandi Drum Circle subscription, and I honestly thought you were a brother even after I met you, and that you're my nephew's African drum teacher.
That's right.
So can you tell me how you came to be an ally of the African-American community and what being an ally actually means?
Yeah, that's a great question, a huge question, and definitely more crucial question than ever before right now. I don't know. It would take a long time to tell the entire story. I'll go back just a little bit. I grew up in a 100% white neighborhood, 100% white public schools on the west side of Detroit, until high school, and I got a scholarship to go to a private high school, which was intentionally very diverse, and loved it. Loved being around people that were different from me all over the world, really. And there were African American students there. At the time, I would have said they were my friends, but after doing more consciousness work around race and what it means to be white, I realized I never went to their homes. They never came to my home. And I didn't know really how they lived. And I didn't really know how any black people lived. I just saw my friends at school. So moving into adulthood, and I had a professional life and education and career as a design engineer with General Motors, which was not satisfying and definitely not what I was called to do in this life. I really had a passion for music and drumming and wasn't supported in that by my family at all. They thought education was the only thing I should concentrate on. So I did until, you know, I graduated. I was working full time as an engineer and really unhappy. So I took a leave and decided to take up drumming, and not even really knowing what that would mean, but took lessons for the first time when I was probably about 23 or 24 years old. Loved it and started playing in rock and roll bands. And that was fun. Moved to Atlanta when I was about 27. And it was only a couple months after I was here that I went to what was called an African drumming workshop on WRFG community radio. And I went to that, and one of the only white people there. But even when I parked across the street, I could feel something really powerful happening, and not even knowing what it was, when I walked in, saw, again, primarily African-Americans dancing to live drumming, and really opened me up to a whole dimension I'd never experienced before. And what I've come to realize over the last, I would say, 5 years is what it was that allowed me to give myself permission to walk into that space. Definitely part of me knew that it wasn't my culture, it wasn't my community, it wasn't my people, but I did the thing that a lot of white people do, and intellectually, you know, told myself, well, I'm a nice guy. I like everybody. I don't hate anybody. It's got to be okay for me to go in there. And I made it okay. I didn't ask permission from anybody. I didn't ask, is it okay if I come in here? Now, given it was on the radio and so they said it was open to the public, but, you know, reading the room and feeling the vibes, there definitely were people there that would prefer I wasn't there. So I went and loved it, started going every weekend, eventually wanted to get a drum, the drummer said, well, talk to Brother Youssef. He makes drums. And you can get one from him. And I ended up doing an apprenticeship with Brother Youssef Crowder, who's here in Atlanta, still drumming. He was my first teacher. I always give him respect and acknowledgement as being my first teacher and helping me start on this musical path. And I carved a drum for myself. Then I carved a second one and gave that to him as payment. And eventually joined a very diverse African drumming group, which was started in a Unitarian church. Eventually started helping out because I had some rhythm training and background, and I could help other members learn the rhythms. Eventually became assistant director. And then when Stone Montgomery, the director of that group, African-American man, left Atlanta, they asked me to become the director. And, you know, things just kept growing. I loved it, loved the music. People were coming to me, asking me to teach. I definitely had very intense resistance from some African-American drummers who told me, I'm not in the culture. I shouldn't be doing this. I definitely shouldn't be teaching. I definitely shouldn't be making any money from this. And I had to really consider their message. And I really thought, you know, maybe I shouldn't do this. And some of my other friends said, well, you know, you should at least try it. You know, your spirit is really in this. If you're meant to do this, then people will come and it'll be supported. So more than 25 years later, it has been the primary way that I've had a life and made a living. And I'll be very honest, I'm still unresolved about what I didn't know, what I was ignorant about in those very early years, and the history that I knew a little bit about. I read a little bit about it in school, but it didn't impact me. You know, I really, as a white person, that history is important, but at the time it didn't have an effect on me. So I've done everything I can to honor the culture, to honor my teachers, both African and African-American teachers. And I know there's a lot unresolved. And I try to be aware of all the issues, and I share with my students about the issues. And I don't represent myself to be anything other than what I am, which is a European descendant, white American, learning the music and passing it on. So that's part of why I want to be an ally. And another part is I want to live in a more peaceful world and a more just world. And I need to contribute to that. I need to be active in creating that. So those things are really important to me. So I guess in a way that's a personal interest, you know, if I don't think it's a bad selfish motivation, but it is my own motivation. You know, I just want the world to be more peaceful so people can live together and, you know, be who they are.
Well, we need more people like you. Can you tell our listeners what is coming to the table and how did you come to lead this group here in Atlanta?
Yes, absolutely. I guess it was early 2016, I read a series in the New York Times about enslaved people at Georgetown University, and Georgetown was about to go bankrupt. And this was in the 18th century, I believe. And they were not supposed to sell any of the enslaved people that were there, but they did, against the wishes of the Catholic Church and against the wishes of the Pope, and it saved the university. Those families were broken up. They were sent different places. They were separated. Many of them went to the far south where conditions were the worst. And in the series, they interviewed descendants of those people, and some of them didn't know that they were descended from that particular story. And it just really affected me. And it turned out that coming to the table as a national organization, they were having their national conference in Virginia in about 2 weeks. And I started exploring more about this group of descendants of those Georgetown people and ended up coming to the table and getting in touch with one of the leaders. She was actually planning the conference that year, a woman named Sharon Morgan. And she started an organization called Our Black Ancestry. And she helps African-American people find more about their ancestors and their lineage through genealogical research. So we talked to her, and we decided to go. We were about, my wife and I were about to go on a long summer driving trip up to Maine to visit some friends and do some paddling, some kayaking. And we went to the first 2.5 days of the conference. We couldn't stay for the whole thing. And we were blown away by the authenticity of the people that came together, the commitment they had to doing healing through building relationships. So Coming to the Table started in 2006. And it started as a forum for descendants of European slaveholding families and descendants of enslaved Africans to come together and build a relationship and get to know each other and really uncover the history that really happened, both in their own families and in the United States. And yeah, there was some real intense confrontations at that gathering that, you know, are necessary. And we really respected that the group provided an honest forum for that to take place. And there were numerous Black people there. And we heard him say things like, I never thought I would sit in a room with white people and talk about race. But they were there. They were committed to it. And they really wanted to give a chance for trust to be created. And my wife and I are trained in an ancestral healing called family constellations. And we've worked with the issue of enslavement and also slaveholding in people's family backgrounds. And we help people come to more resolution about that in their families. So the whole trip, I guess we were gone on the road for about 3 weeks, and we kept talking about it, and we talked to our friends we were visiting about it. And we came back to Atlanta, and we thought, we just can't leave that there and go back in another year for the next conference. So there was no local group in Atlanta at the time. I think there were about 15, 16 local chapters coming to the table around the country, mostly east of the Mississippi. And we talked to a couple of African-American friends about starting a local Atlanta group. And we knew we wanted to have a racially balanced leadership for it to be successful and also to keep us accountable for our ignorance and blind spots as white people. And the first two friends were very enthused, and we met and we talked about it and we planned it. And when it came time, they both said, you know, I can't do this right now. And we really respected that. So we took another couple months, and we asked some other folks and a couple other Black colleagues of my wife, who teaches at the children's school in Midtown. They said, yes, we'll do it. And so we started meeting in December of 2016, and we've had monthly gatherings ever since. And we have a good-sized community now. I would say we're averaging 20 people that come to our gatherings. We've had to switch to online gatherings since the virus came in. And we've also just this week added a discussion group, and it's meeting weekly in the weeks that we don't have a monthly gathering. And we're going through a podcast called Seeing White, which is intended for white people, but anybody could learn from it. It's the real history and the real way that race was constructed intentionally, and the reasons it was constructed and who did the construction of it and what the effects have been. It goes all the way back to, you know, pre-colonial days in the United States, when people just identified each other by their ethnicity or the country they came from. So it's been really meaningful to us, and we're really committed to it. and we're hoping it makes a difference in building bridges and building relationships and creating a more peaceful world.
One of the things that the group recently did was to give white Americans who asked that question, what can we do? You gave several challenges. Could you share at least one with our listeners this morning?
Sure. So many well-intentioned people, like I was one of those well-intentioned white moderates, I think that Martin Luther King talked about as being the people he was most concerned about. You know, we want to help, but we don't even know what we don't know. And many white people, you know, come into the organization. And by the way, you don't have to be in one of those two groups I mentioned. You don't have to be from a family that were slaveholders, and you don't have to be from a family that's descended from enslaved people. Anybody who has good intention and goodwill can join. But many times white people don't know where to start. And that's because we've never had to talk about race. We've never thought about it. Or if we have, we immediately get uncomfortable and want to change the subject or want to avoid it or want to ignore it. You know, we love being comfortable and we love being proper. And we don't want to get into things that are controversial or make us uncomfortable. So one of the challenges that we invite the white members of our group, of our community to do, is to have a conversation with at least a few other white people in their life. Hopefully they're friendly and they can trust them, but to get out of their comfort zone and just have a talk about race. And we even suggest some simple questions and things like, what does it mean to be white? How has race impacted my life? Another good question to consider is, what's a negative experience I ever had regarding race? And then we invite people to imagine, what is it like to be a black person? How do you imagine race impacts a black person's life? And then ask them to just reflect, what did it feel like to talk about these things, you know, with another white person? So it's, you know, we have a long way to go, but we have to start somewhere. And the vast majority of white people are uncomfortable with this topic, and they'd rather not talk about it. But I think we've seen such a surge of interest in the last 10 days, particularly since things have gotten so crucial in the United States. So we definitely see more and more white people wanting to make a change, wanting to change themselves, wanting to learn. And so this is one way they can get started.
And for our listeners who want to learn more about your group or to join, how can they get more information?
Sure. So there's a national organization called Coming to the Table. The website is comingtothetable.org. And there's a tremendous number of resources there. Things people can read, things people can learn about, the values and mission of Coming to the Table, the history of the group. And there's now over 40 local groups. In the 4 years since we became members, we've gone from about 15 or 16 to 40. And I think we're in 16 or 17 states now, and there are local groups starting all the time. As far as our local group, you can find us on Facebook at Coming to the Table Atlanta. And as well, there's a large national Facebook group, and that's just at Coming to the Table. And then if they want to get in touch with me, they could just send me an email. Should I read out the email address?
Yes.
Email address would be M like Michael, K like Kevin, DRUM like drum, @ mindspring.com. I know for some younger folks, Mindspring is kind of a mystery domain, but I've had that one for a really long time.
Well, Chuck, I want to thank you so much for what you're doing and continuing to do. And I have enjoyed being a part of the Coming to the Table Atlanta's Facebook group. I really appreciate what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Kiplin. I'm really honored and appreciate the time.